From the safe walls of General Hospital to the murky Honey Island swamp littered with Victor Crowley's victims, Perry Shen has lived through it all. And he's going to tell us all about it today on Horror Movie News. Let's go!
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
Lights, lights. Welcome everybody to Horror Movie News, episode 18. Oh, just hear that guitar riff. Like, it pumped up. I want Victor Crowley just crashing through that door. I'll be like, take me, Victor Crowley. Let's do it. Hello, everybody. My name is Anthony Becerra. You can find me everywhere at... Oh, I actually changed it. It is no longer Tony B. Dead. It's actually Tony B, same B, Tony B, Tony, _ on Twitter and Instagram. You can find me everywhere there at Tony B, Tony, _.
Hey guys, I'm Oliver Jenin. Follow me on all social media platforms at Ollie Dreamer.
And with us today we have...
Hey guys, I'm Lucretia Lyons. You can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet since there is only one.
And the lone survivor of the Victor Crowley massacre, the Honeymoon Swamp, we have Perry Shen himself.
Woo!
Hey! Hey! Where can people find you online and everywhere?
At Perry Shen, PARRYSHEN.
Right on. And you also have your own website, right? PerryShen.com?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Awesome. Great to have you here. Thanks, my God, man. Such an honor. I gotta say, I once I learned you were coming on the show, I sped through all these movies. I love them. Well, first we gotta do some house cleaning. A little bit on that later. But yeah, so first, when can you guys follow the show and everything? So you can follow us at youtube.com/popcorntalknetwork as well as at Horror News PTN. That's the show Twitter, and you can find us on our popcorntalknetwork.com. And lastly, but not least, the most important one is Apple Podcasts. Please rate and subscribe and leave a 5-star rating. That way we know how the numbers are doing and it'll keep us going pretty much. So please support us there. And we'll appreciate any feedback that you have to give us. So, okay, house cleaning done. Let's get into our first segment, The Abyss. So what have people been watching? Anyone want to start it off? Otherwise,
let
it go.
Well,
yeah. Go ahead.
No,
Lucretia,
go
ahead.
Oh, yeah.
Ladies first.
Well, of course, since Perry was coming in, I had to watch Victor Crowley. I was a big fan of the Hatchet franchise, so I was like, I've got to watch this movie this week. And, guys, it is on Amazon Prime to download, or you can buy the Blu-ray just about anywhere. Mm-hmm. And then also, Leatherface, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, and the Frankenstein, Randy Quaid version were actually given to me from WB Home Entertainment, and I've been watching those. They just released the Blu-rays out, guys, so be sure to check that out from WB Home Entertainment.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, you know, I also watched this little film called Victor Crowley, which is the fourth installment of the Hatchet series, which was awesome, I might say, so we're going to talk about that more today, later on, but I also watched Green Room, but I'm going to talk about that for Crypt, so... And I also want to shut up, because I want to give Perry enough time to talk, you know, so...
I'll go next. So I did see Biozombie, and thanks to our wonderful engineer, Steve. He's the one who bought the film, and he showed it to me, and we saw it together. It's such a wonderful film. It's also my Crypt, I believe, so I'm going to talk about a little bit more on that later, but I saw Biozombie, I saw Hatchet 1, 2, and 3, and Victor Crowley, and also Better Luck Tomorrow.
Wow.
It's not a horror film, but I just had to watch it because I was like, you know, it had a Perry Shen on it, and I love that film too. It was so good. Apart from that, I'm pretty sure everyone here saw Black Panther.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Let's just say it was amazing. It's great. It's a fantastic film. My God, the message is something that is well needed in today's age. Great quotes. One of the ones that stuck with me was, even if it works, it doesn't mean it can't be improved. And I really enjoyed that one by Letitia Wright's Shuri.
She was my favorite character.
Oh, yeah, she was a scene stealer, I gotta say. Oh. But enough about that, because it's not a horror film, but imagine if it was. Would have been nuts.
Yeah.
Okay, so on to our second segment real quick is The Crypt. So you teased Green Room.
Which, thank you, Anthony, so much for educating me about this film, because I had no clue that this movie existed.
So
it stars Patrick Stewart, Alia Shawkat, Anton Yelchin. R.I.P. by the way. This movie was insane. Imogen Poots as well. And I think, like, it's a film that not a lot of people know about, but it's getting amazing reviews. It's been out for like 2 years, And so I highly, highly recommend this. It's so raw and gritty, and it's just, like, a very linear film. Like, you can just get into it, and so intimate, like, just the things that happen to them, and you get afraid of dogs. You never want to be, like, the dogs in this movie. I'm not going to spoil it, but, like, I'm not afraid of dogs.
Fuss!
I love dogs. I love puppies, but, like, you will legitimately get afraid of dogs when you watch this movie. But the acting is phenomenal, so please, Patrick Stewart as an evil Nazi, you need to watch this. And the quick little synopsis is, a punk rock band is forced to fight for survival after witnessing a murder at a neo-Nazi skinhead bar. So, I will not say any more other than just please go watch this movie and tell me what you think of it.
It's a bloody good time.
And you sold me on that.
Yeah.
And I'm so sorry, Perry. I accidentally skipped you. If you do have one for The Abyss, some movies that you've been watching in the past week or so.
Besides, we already talked about Black Panther, yeah. But I sound self-serving, but Victor Crowley came out, yeah. So I had to, I didn't see necessarily the movie, but I saw the behind-the-scenes stuff,
nice.
So I didn't know what they were filming, what they're going to, so it was, like, nice to revisit the behind-the-scenes, and it's a really great companion to the movie.
Oh, okay, I gotta pick up my own copy then, I gotta see the I forgot what it's called. BTS. There you go. Thank you. Sorry, brain fart, coffee, jitters, all around. Right on. So I teased Biozombie. This is actually a flick from 1998, and it's a great comedy zombie flick. I gotta say, the synopsis is: a group of young shoppers and employees must band together when a zombie outbreak overruns their Hong Kong shopping center in the middle of the shopping day. And it's so over the top, like, craziness, but it's still grounded, but it's like the characterizations, like the main characters, one of the guys' name is Woody Invincible and the other guy's name is Crazy B, and then, like, the main female protagonist is, her name's Rolls. And I was just like, I love the style too. It's so funny too. There's legit a whole scene where, like, a guy's working on a car and they just, like, oh. And they both squat down. It's Woody and B, and they squat down. They're looking at this guy's junk and just, like, admiring the big balls that this guy has. Like, why is he working under the car? And this is a horror film, but, like, before everything starts going off, like, it has a certain charm to it. And it was distributed or produced by Tokyo. What was it, Steve? Do you remember?
Tokyo Shock,
which has, like, a lot of crazy, crazy films out there. Like, one of them was, like, Tokyo Gore Police, I believe, was also Tokyo Shock, if you've come across that movie. It is batshit, so just wild. Like, I gotta say, it's like an anime film. Like, it's like anime, but, like, in real life, like, over-the-top anime horror. Like, you know how crazy that can get?
Yeah, because I love Ichi the Killer and those kinds of things. Yeah.
It's like Gozu, if you've seen Gozu, too. Like,
no, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, it's also by Takayoshi Miike. He did this one film called Gozu, which is also, like, insane, but, like, Tokyo Gore Police is a little just nuts. So it also kind of spoofs George Romero's Dawn of the Dead and gives off some Dead Alive vibes from Peter Jackson.
Oh, I love that movie.
Also meets Small Rats.
Yeah.
Now I have to watch it, because that's my favorite movie of all time.
Because they just, like, go perusing through this mall, and they're like, kind of destructive, and they don't really care about, like, anything. They're just, like, they're in a sense, like, deadbeats, but it's just fun to watch them, you know? It also has a lot of heart to it, and I would even say it reaches, like, the same emotional depth that I feel when I watched Shaun of the Dead between Sean and Ed. That's the same kind of relationship that Woody and Bee have. Like, it's the same, like, type of, like, oh, you're my brother, even though, like, it's just so good. I really enjoyed this film. If you can find it, you definitely watch it. It's called Biozombie from 1998. And also, Steve pointed out, too, that there's English version. There's English subtitles, because it's in Cantonese, I believe. So it's English subtitles. And then,
correct.
And then there's also English subtitles, which is, like, interesting, because it's kind of, like, broken English subtitles, and we saw it like that. And it's just, like, it's really great. It's just so good. Definitely recommend that one.
It's a level of authenticity to it that's just unmistakable.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it's all, like, practical effects, and it's just so... some of the shots, too, were just, like... you gotta see them. Like, they trick you in some of the shots, and I thought it was a brilliant film. And so who's gone?
I
got lost for a bit.
Well, actually, this is a film that's coming out on Friday, Death House, which stars Kane Hodder, who is Victor Crowley, of course, in this franchise, and then Phyllisa Rose, who plays the pill popping PR lady in Victor Crowley, and of course, you know, from Sleepaway Camp, but also Tony Todd, Dee Wallace, Richard Speight Jr., who was just on Michael Rosenbaum's podcast, Inside of You, who's Gabriel on Supernatural, big kind of a horror guy. Be sure to listen to that. But yeah, this film is really interesting because it was written by Gunnar Hansen, who most people know as Leatherface. But, you know, he passed away 2 years ago. This was his original script and director. And, you know, then, of course, the writer as well, Harrison Smith, just decided to go ahead and make the film. And it's full of great horror, like cameos and stuff like that. So, yeah, just be sure to watch that on Friday when it comes out.
Right on. Nice. Do you know where we can find it? Did you mention it?
Yeah, Death House will be in theaters on Friday. I'm not really sure if it's going to be on video on demand immediately, but yeah, it will actually come out to theaters. I believe like Limley type, you know, maybe not a full release.
The select theaters, right on. Oh, yeah, so keep a lookout for that. Check your Fandango listings and all that jive, and I'm sure you'll be able to find it. I'm definitely going to try to look for it. Okay, cool. Perry, do you have any films that you'd like to recommend to people? Some like horror films that you just enjoy?
It's funny that you mentioned Shaun of the Dead, because that just always keeps coming back to me, just with the whole comedy horror that Victor Crowley is that to me that was kind of like the first sort of like mainstream that it got out, and it was like really nice that that kind of genre was like horror could be something else besides just what you normally see or know about slashers. And then when he's like walking and he's like clueless and then he's going through and he's like oblivious that the world has just gone over. Batshit.
Yeah.
And he's like, in the story, he's like slipping on blood and he just thinks he's like slipping on milk, you know? Just like brilliant stuff like that. Yeah.
That's great. And then also when he has like that guy come up to him on the street, he's like, no, you just get away. He just pushes him off. He's like, no, I'm drunk. I'm hungover. Like, come on.
Yeah, I can't wait to actually show my kids that, but they're not old enough yet. But they'd love it.
You can go Lucretia's route where they just...
Never too early to introduce horror. You know, we all turned out okay, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I actually, when I was younger, I was terrified of horror films. Like, even if they were showed to me, I was like, like, I'm good. Chucky was a huge one for me. Like, I was terrified of Chucky. I could not bring myself to watch Chucky.
Yeah, my brother and I loved horror, and I always loved scaring him. I guess because I was the older one. Like, me and my mom would even screw with him with, like, we had a Chucky doll. Like, and when he was watching, I think, Child's Play 3 once, we were, like, outside, like, tapping on the window.
Oh my God.
I was mean.
Although now my youngest daughter is 10, about to be 10, and she's become so savvy that like she knows camera angles. She's like, oh no, a jump scare is gonna happen.
Oh.
She sees the camera pan away and they know that it turns back over here, the guy's gonna be right there.
She's well versed in the horror language,
and she's could be a great female director one day. You know, knowing those camera angles. Exactly. No.
Can't wait to see that first film. Let's do it. No. Have her on, come on.
Yeah. It's like this is her first horror film at 10.
Yeah. Like, well, my inspiration for this.
Imagine being directed by your daughter.
That'd be fantastic.
Right on. So, I just want to give more focus on you now. So, I have a little general overview of your work and what you've done. I mentioned Better Luck Tomorrow that happened in came out in 2002. Mm-hmm. That was I gotta say that I just really enjoyed that film. I definitely I know it's not horror, but some of the parts of the film is very like horror related.
Yeah.
Definitely like psychological of like traversing the high school landscape and just being so brilliant and just getting bored with like the everyday routine and like being stuck in a rut of like what's expected from you and what you do, and then how he goes off and starts doing like dealing and doing the cheat sheets, and it kind of escalates to drugs and the final, you know, blow with a bat. And I won't say much, but like
actually we just had our 15-year anniversary screening.
Ooh.
And at the screening I actually met the guy who my character was based on in real life, and he just got out of prison. I was like, whoa. I had all these questions, but at the same time I was like, this guy's a convicted murderer, you know.
I had no idea it was based off a true story.
Mm-hmm. 1990, Sunny Hills. Yeah I didn't know it at the time, but it wasn't like based, but something very similar happened, but the director didn't want to like say that it was definitely inspired by it. Mm-hmm. But and then he kind of, you know, took, you know, certain liberties, but yeah, it happened in 1990, something very similar. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh man.
Yeah. That's fantastic. I mean, that's not fantastic, but
yeah,
I'm
it's fascinating.
It is. It's just like, oh, I had no idea this was inspired by something actual. But I can kind of see it now. It's like, it's just so complex. And then you kept playing that character too, just having to deal all this, like, when, and it's so unexpected because you're the one who snaps at the end, in a sense.
Right, the guy who's kind of like the stable guy.
Yeah, you're the most stable guy, and like, and you have your friend who's like the wild one, you know, who's like always getting beat up by Han, which I thought was hilarious. And you're the one who's just like, and I was just like, that was so brilliant. And then that scene where they're holding him down, and it's the two friends and they're holding him down, and the camera's just revolving around them. Oh, that scene is just so powerful to me.
Yeah,
I was
some
just
artistic
like,
stuff going on.
Yeah.
Was that weird, kind of meeting someone that you, like, portrayed? That was
absolutely. It was the first time ever happened. Yeah. I was kind of, like, lost for words. Because, I mean, I thought I knew everything about this movie front and back. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden he goes, excuse me, this is the guy that you love. And I'm like, I had all these, like, questions. Like, what really happened, you know? Because we didn't know exactly what happened, you know? So, yeah, he gave me the skinny on that.
Oh, did he say anything like weird or like I don't know?
Basically, he's very normal. Okay. But he said he basically had to like refute a lot of the stuff that happened in the movies that we took certain liberties with. Mm. Like I lose my virginity to a prostitute, and people would ask him, "Did you really lose your virginity?" He's like, "No, you're not."
Oh, that's funny.
So
yeah, that was interesting. And when they go to Vegas and everything. And I was just like, how old are these kids? They're in the club gambling, smoking, drinking.
Ballers,
I was just like, dude, that was so awesome. Also, you've been on 6 seasons of General Hospital portraying Brad Cooper. Right? Nice. How long is 6 seasons? That's not 6 years. That's got to be more, right?
It's 5 years.
5 years?
Dang,
that's half a decade. How's your time been on General Hospital? Always a blast?
It's always fun. It's on and off, but it's been something that's been really cool, just because every time I've been part of something, like a TV show, it's been at the most like 3-4 episodes. This one's like over almost like 150 now, so it's nice to be able to like build something and then change directions, because first, as the creature know that I was a real asshole when I first came
on. His character was not a good guy initially,
but people sort of like liked it, and then the writers heard that and then did some things to redeem me so that I became like the good guy, and then later I did, you know, and then became a little stale, so then they made me a little bit bad again but still good. So it's real fun being able to play that like as a real human being.
Cool.
And too, like Brad, you know, was part of one of the first gay weddings in daytime, so that's been a big thing for your character with Lucas, who's a member of like so many famous families, like from the Scorpios to the Spencers. I mean, he's legacy character. So that's what's really cool about Brad being able to be a part of that. And then now they're adopting a baby on the show. So yeah.
That's cute. That's
so I still watch.
Yeah, I was like, you do that.
She's like, yeah. So I've heard.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
I do miss your friendship with Britt. You and Kelly had the best chemistry.
Hopefully we'll see something.
Yeah, y'all have to shade the nurse's ball if they have one this year. That's the best. That's
visit
the best
her in
thing.
Prison, right?
Yeah,
she's in
exactly.
Prison, right?
You know, you could go to prison and watch the nurse's ball with her. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Look at that. Yeah. I'm so far removed. Like, this is great.
I wish I knew what they were talking about.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so much different content, niches. Yeah.
See, it was General Hospital, you know, something like that. Yeah. Like, okay, I'm in.
They have had vampires on the spinoff. Yeah.
No way.
Yes. That's
insane. It's fantastic. Also, you have an extensive credits list also for so on IMDb with over 200 appearances. I mean, my god, that's amazing. You've been on so many shows. You've been on CSI, I believe, and
NCIS.
My bad. I'm just like, do you even have time to sleep nowadays? Are you good?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long career, so I mean, that's all spread out from like a 20-year career. So it's you know, that's only. It's only like a few handful of shows a year, right? If you break it down like
that. Yeah, that's true. Okay.
So I'm able to, thank goodness I've been able to, you know, keep my youth so I can stay in the business for a little bit.
Yeah, I've been wanting to ask, how old were you when you did Better Luck Tomorrow?
Oh, I was 27.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
See, much like Kristen Bell, you just never age.
Yeah, you age so gracefully.
I just got carded a couple months ago for a rated R
no
movie.
No way.
Oh, wow.
And you're like, oh, yeah. Thank you.
I didn't know because I thought I paid with a credit card. Because, like, for the credit card, they ask for IDs. So yeah. Can I see some ID? I'm like, sure. I'm like, but wait, I paid for cash. And I'm like, oh. I'm like, really? And then when she saw my date, she's like, oh. So I'm like, yeah. I'm just like,
that's awesome.
Twice the age.
I also wanted to bring up, you've done some voice acting in the video games.
Yeah.
So you've done Winston and Sleeping Dogs, mm-hmm. which I'm actually playing right now.
Oh,
believe it or not.
It's a great game.
It's so good. I love the fighting mechanics.
Yeah.
And I love that, like, I'm, like, taking orders from you. Like, I'm beating people
I'm
up for you.
I'm the main bad guy.
Yeah, yeah. It's like when he arrives, like, you're, like, my first connect. Yeah. I'm, like, proving myself to you. Yeah. Yeah, it's so good. It's I was like, no game. Way, he's Winston.
First time, it was so hard. The fighting mechanics I wasn't used to because I'm used to just button mashing.
Right.
Yeah. But this one, you actually have to have some coordination and mm-hmm. like I just want to see what I want to see my scenes and I was stuck on this one level. I'm like, oh my god, I just want to get through this. I just want to see what I did.
Yeah, because it's like it's one of my favorite fighting mechanics because it's like you do like button smash, I believe it's like square or X, and then but then when they're gonna hit you press that counter button, mm-hmm. yeah. which so you just counter that. And I love that also that they have that in the Batman games as well. So I love that. I've beaten the game before. I'm playing it again on my PS4. Like I rebought it on the PS4 and I'm playing it again because it's just such a fantastic game. And also the world that you're in and being in Hong Kong is just so cool. Like I really enjoyed that game. One game I haven't been able to play though, ooh. Your Takeda in Mortal Kombat X.
Yeah, me and my brother played that one. It's pretty my cool.
God. I was obsessed. I was playing that nonstop when it first came out. Huge Mortal Kombat fan. How does that feel like being immortalized in like a video game like Mortal Kombat? A new character, he's basically a legacy character.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When I found out who I was like, and this really following the sort of the offspring of the four, right? Mm-hmm. And then so I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I have like actual like big scenes, the cutscenes in between, but the fun parts. Or like, because you're all these combinations of that you're pairing up, fighting against people. You have to say that person's name and just like giving a listening, and then they would because some I didn't know how to pronounce it. But like, okay, tell me what you're say this person's name, and then some witty one-liner, and then I think on YouTube they've like someone has edited all of them together, so it just
there's compilation.
Oh, wow. You have that on your page on perryshen.com. Yeah. Actually, yeah, it's like 7 minutes long. I was watching that too.
So and it's just awesome. And then some when I actually see the actual deaths actually happening, I'm like, oh my god.
Very creative.
Yeah,
very
do you have creative. To like do the voice for your deaths too? You're like, oh, like
yeah, because they say that to the end because obviously it's vocally stressful, so. You do all the scenes, and then at the end, you do what's called the efforts, which is the grunting. And they say a short stab into the, and you're like, ugh! Now a big stab, you're like, oh! And then they say, all right, now this is your death scene. And I'm like, and I said, hold on a second, what kind of death is this? And then he says, he's like going through his notes. Someone grabs your spleen through your mouth and rips it through, and I'm like, okay, that was something very different from what I had planned. So, add some gurgling at the end, you know, something's coming out of my mouth. So,
did you have to like channel your inner Sean?
I was like, I've done tons of horror movies, I can do this.
Yeah. Oh, we have Mortal Kombat.
Oh,
this,
my gosh, I love
that.
That
was nice.
Do you actually play Decatur, or do you play someone else? I play Devorah and Cassie Cage.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, those are my mains. Yeah. Who do you play as?
I like my character because I have reach. No one can get me because I have those
whip
blades. Yeah, so it's fun to do that, and then you know just
make hear your grunts.
Exactly, and get to. I don't play with the kids, but like sometimes like Lego Avengers, I've done characters for that. So I'm like, kids, look, I'm fighting myself.
Yeah, you're the
Iron Legion.
Iron Legion, and that too. That was awesome. Yeah, I saw a clip of that too. So you've done TV, you've done film, you've done voice acting. You've also done first time producing with Unidentified in 2013, mm-hmm. and you also starred in that as well.
Yes.
Yeah, I believe you can find that on Amazon as well and rent that. Yeah, I was actually if I had time, I was gonna watch that one too because like Unidentified, I was like I love it. Like anything UFO, right. So I'm like I'm all over that.
Yeah,
like,
I'm very proud of that. It's usually as an actor, I only know. All the scenes that I'm only in, but this one as a producer also, like I knew every single aspect from like the opening credits to like, you know, what we had for lunch that day to like what went wrong in that scene. It was like really cool. It was exhausting, but it was really fulfilling.
Did it definitely give you like a different like an appreciate, perspective and appreciation.
Every
of, like,
producer
the craft.
I've worked with in the past, if I saw, them after this, I gave them like a big old hug. I'm like, I'm so sorry, I did not know what you did. Yeah,
you're like, welcome to the club.
Yeah, yeah. But the best part of that movie is that we actually sent a camera into space on a GoPro. We sent it out and we caught the stratosphere. So you see the blue of the Earth and the black of the sky. And I was like, I can't believe we got this.
Wow. With the GoPro.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
How did you set that up?
A weather balloon.
Okay.
Wow. And it's actually on YouTube right now, of the behind the scenes that I had a camera. And the first time we did it, it did not work. And we chased the balloon all the way to like Arizona state line from California.
Oh, man.
Because the balloon did not pop. There was like a leak and it slowly kept drifting out. And we were tracking it through like a ham radio, which apparently has like the best range.
Wow.
And like we could not, we're like, why is it not, why can't get it? And then the second time we did it differently. You'll see if you go to YouTube, it's unidentified space cam. And we just blew it up really big, so it shot up into space and then definitely exploded. And then it pinpointed the exact place. And you'll see the sky. It landed on this guy's farm. And I'm like, look, it's right there, the package. And he's like looking at it. He's like, wondering what the hell this is. And on the package, it says, this is not a bomb. This is a camera. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, I can't. I really want to catch that film and probably watch it within this week or so. You've gone to numerous universities around the country sharing your experience as an Asian American in the industry, and you just give them a talk about like your experiences.
Especially after Better Luck Tomorrow, when it was all Asian American cast and it was kind of like pretty groundbreaking. Mm-hmm. It was like the Asian Americans Black Panther, on a smaller scale, because when it came out, it was like number one in the box office per screen. So a lot of people were empowered, but like this was way before even like social media, like word of mouth got out. That's how people knew about it, and through emails. Mm-hmm. There was no, I mean, MySpace had just started, you know. So I kind of like all the stuff that I saw behind closed doors on the studio level, I just sort of imparted to like a new generation so that they knew, you know, hopefully to get their stuff mm-hmm. out and what to do.
Right on. Sorry, this is like my inner engineer talking. Can you just like scoot in a bit more?
Oh, yes.
I saw you like almost at the end of it. Yeah, like, no, come on. We want to see. This is all about you. So, yeah, apart from that, also, you co-created the graphic novels Secret Identities, the Asian American Superhero Anthology, and Shattered.
Yes.
Wow.
Because I grew up as a comic fan, and I still am. So this whole age of, you know, Marvel movies, it's amazing for anyone who's followed comics. But I just noticed, and a lot of friends knew, that a lot of Asian American artists, the top ones, were drawing all Caucasian characters because they were all created from, like, the 1930s, you know? And then anytime they try to include any diversity, it was sort of like it felt forced because mm-hmm. that universe was all, you know, it didn't start that way, you know. Right. So we decided to create a whole universe of all Asian American superheroes. So these were we got the top Asian American artists and we had them create Asian American superheroes in a world, and we created an anthology.
Wow. Nice. That's amazing. Yeah. And is Shattered also part of the anthology?
Yes, that was a sequel to it. And so there's been a lot of Greg Pak. He wrote this one that is actually spun off from an anthology story that started from Shattered, mm-hmm. and it's a Cadet Mech U, I think it's called, but it's been selling really well on Boom Studios, I think their comic. Yeah, so that we were really proud. Like, oh, it started from us.
Be sure to check that out, everybody.
Yeah, would you ever want to, like, maybe possibly, like, live-action adaptation?
That was always a thing, because before we would always hear, like, all these graphic novels were being adapted for mm-hmm. projects. It was, like, mm-hmm. 60%, so we said, okay, this could be a springboard for Asian American creators, so it was nice that, you know, out of, like, the 30 stories, like, two actually went off onto their own and you know, became something.
Nice.
Well, and Boom Studios, I believe, has done some projects with Netflix, and Netflix probably, you know, with the lack of success with Iron Fist, might be inclined to fix one of these that right. might make people happy.
Yeah.
That would be good. Yeah.
That's true, yeah. Get some representation. Alrighty then. So that was just a quick general overview, and now we're going to move into the Hatchet and Victor Crowley quadrilogy that you've been a part of. So, just to run down the list of characters that you've played. So, in Hatchet, you were Sean. You were new to the scene of Florida. You're playing a character who was new. His brother hooked him up with the job to be the tour guide on the boat swamp. And that was fantastic character. I love the accent that you put on at the beginning, and then once things started getting real, you had to cut the shit pretty much.
Exactly.
It was so good. And then in Hatchet 2, you played Justin, which is Sean's twin brother, brother. It's gotta be.
In the first one, they said my brother got me this touristy job. I don't know really how to drive the boat. It's my first day on the job, and then so when my character bites it, I. Afterwards, Adam was like, okay, I think we're going to do a sequel since the first one did so well. And I said, well, you mentioned he had a brother, so I inceptioned him.
You really? I was wondering. I was like, how did this happen? Yeah. Okay. I want to get more into that later.
Before the soap opera, where you knew that they do that.
Yeah, I just really love that part, too. It's just so good. It's so conscious of the what it's doing. We get it. It's the same guy, but it's his brother. So it's okay. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, it's okay. Even me, I'm like, yeah, it's okay. Let's do it. Yeah, I love this. And then in Hatchet 3, you play Andrew, which is the paramedic that goes on the scene. And if you haven't seen Hatchet 1 through 3, it's each movie is another day in the Hatchet saga, I would say.
Correct. It's three consecutive days.
Right. Which is amazing, too. I love it. I love how it picks up right at the ending of the last film. From the boat scene at the end where she's he's taking him out of the water to the next to the ending of 2 where she just blasts him in the face. Oh my God. That was my favorite ending for the films, just that shocking smash cut. Yeah. Just boom and then done. And yeah. It's just oh, that's brilliant. And then you reprise your role as Andrew in Victor Crowley.
Yes. Oh. Victor Crowley takes place 10 years after. Mm-hmm. So at this point, my character is the only one that known to have survived mm-hmm. these murders. Mm-hmm. But then they're it's very convenient. So a lot of people think I did it. So I'm the O.J. Simpson of the world.
Right. I love that line.
That was great. And we actually do have the trailer for Victor Crowley, which we could, if we can pull that up real quick to watch that. Oh, man. Reminisce about these scenes. It is a little dark in here. But. Yeah. So this is a beginning part. I believe this takes place in 1960s.
Yes, the first scene, yeah.
Yeah, dark sky films.
And I love Jonah Ray in the first scene there. He's so funny. They take us
and a small camera crew and there's that pale papa. Your ex? Ex-wife?
Yep. That's Q from Impractical Jokers. I'm never going back to that swamp. They offered
600,000. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I love that too.
Oh my gosh. Minor issue
with our right edge. The vocal fry. Would you like Xanax, Ambien, Valium,
Oxy? She was amazing. Rose. Yeah. If you want. And in the crash, I love how that guy flies backwards. You have the intern go out the window. I was like, okay. Ooh, the best hatchet.
I agree.
Your plane has crashed. We're gonna get you all.
Oh
out.
My god, Dave, I love it. He was so funny.
I think the witch's death itself is gonna fall on us.
Oh. Oh, this part was very, very innovative. I gotta say. Motion sensor. I think it's on a
timer. Oh my god. That part really made me happy because I was like, this guy's kind of a douche. And you have a few of those characters that you're like, no, that was cool.
Austin's dead.
He was not supportive of her career.
Dude, I'm right here. I love that part. Oh my god. Oh, so good. And then that hatchet right there, perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oops.
We are so dead.
Yeah, Laura Ortiz was really funny. I had not really recognized her from much of anything else, and I was like, man, she's funny. Yeah,
she's actually on. I saw some the trailer for Holliston, and she's on that with Adam Green and also Joe Lynch.
Corey English,
yeah. Oh my God,
she looks so familiar. And then I also realized she was in The Hills Have Eyes.
Yes. Oh yeah, she was right. Yeah. I saw
one of the mutants, the good mutant.
Oh, she was Ruby. Yeah. Oh, wow, interesting. I've been wanting to revisit that film because, like, that ending Slaughterfest, like, how he just goes at it at the end. Oh,
that's she's also in this commercial for, I think, T-Mobile, and she's this cheerleader, and they're like these scientists testing the longevity of the battery, and she's just, they're letting her just go. She's like, and then she said this, and she says, oh my God.
I remember that.
Yeah. She's so funny. Yeah. Before I even knew her, I'm like, this commercial is so hilarious, and I found out it was her. I'm like, oh my God, that's you!
That's so great. Did you tell her when you saw her, like, dude, were you in that commercial?
yeah, of course.
Oh, she was so good. So just a quick overview of the film. So Victor Crowley, it's directed by Adam Green, and he's done all of them, all four of them.
He's written all of them. He did not direct a third one because he was doing Holliston, the TV show.
Oh, sorry, okay.
B.J. McDonnell, who was our DP for the first two, he directed it.
Oh, nice. And he's also friends with Joe Lynch, which we had on the show for Mayhem, which was one of our first shows, like within the first 10, I believe. That was a huge, so I was like, oh, so nice to have him. He was a great guy. So Victor Crowley's played by Kane Hodder, and he's also, apart from you, he's been in all four films as well.
Us two are the only ones that have been.
Yeah, you're like the OGs. That's so awesome. That's why I was like, more on that later. But and also Dave Sheridan, which was the wannabe actor guy, and he was so funny.
Yeah, he was great.
Oh, he was just so clueless, but he had like a heart, you know. Like he wasn't just like this, this fucking guy. No,
you think he's gonna be like the annoying guy, but then you're like, you fall in love with him.
Yeah, just like Rose does. Yeah.
And that's what I like, is you kind of expected different people to live longer, but you're like, oh, okay, no, Rose actually is the one, because usually the girl who was like showing her boobs at the beginning is the one who dies, but you're like, oh no, because she's funny, we're keeping her around.
Also, I noticed this is the Victor Crowley is one of the only films that doesn't have any nudity.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, because the first three, I believe, have almost all of them have nudity. Like they tease.
Oh, yeah. There was some
nudity.
Right?
A little bit.
He had a sign, or he allegedly signed the penis. Yeah. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. No, I was like, that's with the book, he's like, no.
If any of the VODs, they cut that part out.
Yeah,
I didn't know. So only the Blu-ray is the way to see it, or the DVD, because they cut out all that stuff.
Really? Wait, like they cut up like the nudity, or
they cut out all the nudity?
Yeah. Oh, so there is nudity in the film.
Yes.
Yeah. I've been cheated. Yeah. Amazon. I didn't get. That's what I said. Like, I saw no nudity. I was
The biggest laughs come from those scenes.
That's weird, because I saw Hatchet 2 and 3 on Amazon, and they all had nudity.
Yeah.
But Victor Crowley didn't.
You
I've been cheated. I want my movies. I want my movies.
Cool and uncut.
So do they show like when he takes it out?
They showed. Yeah.
I want it all.
It was an interesting day, because we shot that on the same day, so we have one where she wants me to sign this, and then the guy wants me to sign his crotch, and then my wife's like, so I was like, I had a day today. I saw it all today.
That's great.
You were an equal opportunity signer.
Mm-hmm.
And then Laura Ortiz plays Rose, which was great. Chase Williamson plays the boyfriend to the director, and Felisa Rose plays a pill-popping publicist, which were fantastic. Mm-hmm. What a great crew. And I love the whole, it was contained mostly within the airplane. In the scene, and the harsh red, I was like, oh, it's so good, because they're gonna die.
He actually, some guys are the guys that built all the sets for Rogue One. They built that plane for us, because they were fans of Hatchet, so they're like, they're more than willing to help out. So
that's so cool.
So the plane, I mean, looks simple enough, but it had to be able to be fine when we're flying it, but they had to be able to be submerged when we crash and hold water, know. So it had to be, pretty fancy, didn't look fancy.
That's awesome. So I would like to ask, how did this project come to you, from the start of Hatchet 1, because I'm guessing that's where it snowballed.
It was just a regular audition, although that one day I had four auditions, and I had to juggle them and say, okay, you guys, we can't all have it. I need an hour in between to logistically get places, right? So, I mean, that day started at 9, there's one at 12, one at 2, and then the Hatchet one was at 5 p.m., and I packed a lunch, so I wouldn't have to stop anywhere. And by the time at the end of the day, I was so physically exhausted that I kind of didn't give a crap. Yeah. I was like, I was going to just do this, you know, let her rip. And usually those auditions are the best because you're out of your head. Mm-hmm. You're not worried about, oh, I, this will be bringing this much exposure or this much dollars, you know. It's just kind of, you're just doing it and you're loose, you mm-hmm. know. And I did my thing. And the scene was the part where I switch accents. It was that scene where I'm driving the boat and things go wrong. I'm like, y'all try the crawfish, yeah? and then when I did that switch, the Adam was in the room and a couple of the producers, and it was such a big response in terms of laughter. It took me by surprise because I was like, what, really? Because usually if I think something's funny, the actors do this a lot, especially me, like, You overdo it because you're like, oh, this is funny, right? Yeah. And then you ruin the joke, you know. And this time I just kind of did it, and the joke hit, and then they brought me back for the callback, and then I did it again. This time I did a no-no. I switched things because I was like. I don't want to do an Asian accent, so I did a Bostonian accent because I say that I'm from Boston, so I did this Bostonian accent and like silence, no crickets. And then Adam's like, "Could you do what you did in the first time?" And then so I did it, and then it got, you know, the huge laughs. And then when I got the job, I told Adam, I said, I get the joke, but of him, you know, have this, you know, New Orleans accent, but then he switches to a Chinese accent, you know, because he's a con artist. Mm-hmm. But I said, I have a problem just doing the remainder of the film in an Asian accent, you know, because kind of like that's the joke, you know, it's the accent, right? And after Better Luck Tomorrow, you know, I'm trying to do something progressive for mm-hmm. Asian Americans on film. And so I said, how about... And Adam was like, okay, yeah, we'll just cut it out. And I was like, no, I get it. I said, but what if he loses the Asian accent at a certain point? So, like, it still milks that joke for one more beat, but it makes this character progressive, and you don't know what he is. And I, you know, and then so it actually ended up working. And you know, kudos to Adam. He could have said, you know, I'll get someone else to do it, you know, but he, you know, listened and you know, just, you know, the input and it worked and ended up being really a great character trait mm-hmm. for that character. So
yeah, because once it's revealed, you get like socked in the face. Like, and you're like, how dare you? Because
like, he lies. So I put him on an Asian accent. Yeah. Like, what?
It's just like, it's a cool little arc right there for your character. I just want to like that ending scene to Victor Crowley. I don't want to try to spoil anything, but like, how was it work? Like, just with all that blood on you, just coming on you.
Yeah, and I didn't know because we were shooting really fast, and they were like the makeup artist was just, you know, boom, 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 and I couldn't tell. It didn't feel like a lot, you know, because mm-hmm. I've had stuff where I feel it on me, and I'm like, is it enough? And they're like, oh yeah, it's enough. and I saw the result. And I'm like, oh wow, yeah.
Oh man!
Looked like a Jackson Pollock painting.
Yes.
Is it hard balancing like the right amount of horror and comedy? Because we talked about this a little bit. I mentioned it. Is that like difficult? Because you're probably like trying to like not to crack up like when you're filming.
Yeah.
So how is that?
I think it comes with. I mean, I'm naturally find the humor in most things because usually it's there. You pointing out the absurdity of something. I even do it on GH. Mm. You know, it's like sometimes. You know, there's some things where it's like in soap, you know, you're talking to yourself, and then I will sometimes say after the line and get out the exposition, I will go, why am I talking to myself? You know, just like you point it out, and then people start liking that part of Brad. And same thing with Hatchet. You know, you point out the absurdity of mm-hmm. some things, and the audience is thinking the same thing, and they appreciate when you point that out. Or you know, so it's it can come very organically, you know, in terms of duress, you mm-hmm. know.
I really enjoyed that one character in Hatchet 3, the one like he was part of the SWAT team or the cops that are on the scene who brings all those weapons in his bag.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like the audience member who's like, "No, man, these are his swamps. Uh-huh. Like, you don't know dealing with out here." And I love that character too, cuz it was just so funny watching him, cuz he was kind of like a He's like our like he's pretty much like the audience member. He represents the audience member.
He's like, that guy's smart. He knows. Yeah, what's exactly. You know, like, yeah, I would do that.
Yeah. That's why it was like really good that you bring up how like they're able to like to show you like you know, you can point out the absurdities
humor from authenticity. You know, right? Like, yeah, I'm gonna be prepared if I know what's up. And actually, that guy, he's great. He's actually D. Snyder's son. Cody Snyder. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Great.
I love D. Snyder. I recommend, and you know, maybe show this to your daughters when they're teenagers and getting online, because that movie, Strangeland, that D. Snyder was in and directed and wrote, scared me from talking to strangers online. It's pretty graphic, but you know, just show it to your kids, guys.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with this work. Or maybe I'm just not sure. But yeah. I gotta check him out. D. Snyder, gotta remember that.
Twisted Sister was his band, but yeah, Strangeland. It's a pretty good movie, as I say. Show it to kids. They won't talk to strangers online.
Right on.
No.
How is it working with so many different like horror veterans? I mean, you're a horror veteran yourself. It must be a lot of fun. Like, you worked with Mercedes, who was in Buffy. You know, she played Harmony.
Yes.
But you were on Buffy as well,
I
right?
Was, yeah.
And then you have, obviously, like, Laura. You have Felissa, who... horror veterans. So how is that, we're just being such a huge ensemble cast?
I mean it's kind of great being able to see and work with people that you are fans of, you know, and just like with just being able to, like, you know, on the side, like, talk about stuff with Tony, but like, you know, ask him Candyman questions. You know, how much did he get paid per sting, right?
He had
something written in his contract about, you know, you get X amount of dollars for each sting. And the most favorite one was, though, Zach Galligan in number 3, asking him all about Gremlin stuff. And that guy has, like, a mind like a lockbox. He remembers everything, and he can tell everything in detail, you know. And you ask him about Gremlins 2. And,
oh, my gosh.
And then ask him about Key and Peele's sketch about Gremlins 2. Oh, yeah. It's great. It's so much fun.
Well, and that's why I love this franchise so much, is because it pokes fun of itself and the horror genre by having all these, you know, horror veterans like Danielle Harris, who, you know, was in a part of it as well. And yeah, like Felissa, all these little jokes, because that's what I like, is it's an inside joke for us too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
So how do you feel about that? Were you a big horror fan? Did you love all the inside jokes?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I hadn't seen all of them, but then, you know, once I work with them, I would watch, you know, everyone's work, and then, you know, and become fans. And so it's just great to see, though, that even though it's in a genre that may not always be in the mainstream, everybody is, they know their shit. They're locked down. Like, especially it came to like when we were shooting Victor Crowley, we would lose pages. Like, we just would run out of time, because when the sun came up, we had to stop, because we're shooting nights. And we'd be like, okay, we lost a page, so we'll pick it up the next day. Then we lose another page, and it becomes 2 days. And then by the end, the last day, when we had no more days to roll over, we shoot an average of maybe like 8 to 10 pages on indie film. This one, we it had ballooned up to like 32 pages.
Whoa.
And we just had to like lock it down. There was no time for BS. And everybody works differently. Some actresses or actors, they need their time or space or whatever. There's like no bullshit. Everyone was like boom, 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 and we got it all. It was amazing feat in being wet and submerged in the plane. And Tiffany Shepis was underwater
the whole time.
And nobody's complaining, and everyone had every right to complain, because you've got the huge fan at 40 miles an hour blowing, it's freezing, but no one's complaining. We just knew what we had to do, and that just goes to show the testament of the work ethic and all these people that had been working for, like, you know, decades. It came into play. You know, you had people who were like probably newer, they'd probably be freaking out. Or probably being a little divish and be like, I'm not getting in that water right now. You know, like, I already did this scene, like, you know, 2 times, whatever. But, and the behind-the-scenes footage, for example, Tiffany Shepis, who is she's done, you know, over 130 films, you know, and she is, she's underwater, and then most of the film, and then in the behind-the-scenes, they played a joke and said that they didn't get that last shot. So she just got out of the water. She's in her nice warm room of coffee. She's about to be wrapped, and they were good joke and said, we need you back in. And the crew is like really good actors. They're like, yeah, man, this didn't work. And they're all in on it. And then you see Tiffany like, okay, let's go.
Oh,
like,
nice.
What are we talking about? Let's just do it. And she's like, we're just kidding. You're out. But like anybody, somebody would like, fuck,
what a trooper.
That, man.
Yeah.
I'd be like, fuck you. Yeah, no, let's go.
So, I mean, just that's, really shows at the moment. You know, she wasn't in on it. She thought she was had to go back in that water again and have all this heavy equipment on her because she's stuck under the plane. Yeah. And
there's like a huge element of claustrophobic too to be like there and just oh my god. I felt so bad for her too when she bites the dust. It was one of the most like somber's deaths because it's not caused by
the most heartbreaking part of the whole franchise. I think
I have to agree because it's like it's not caused by Victor. When Victor's like you know going up, I'm like yeah let's do this. Like but when she dies, it's like oh man,
not cool.
not
cool, Victor.
I was like, dude. And then so you mentioned something to me before the camera started rolling. How you noticed that Joe Lynch's film Mayhem also has stars a Asian actor Steven Yeun
as lead,
and then you noticed that this film also stars you, an Asian actor.
Yeah, because Adam Green and Joe Lynch are you know they're like best friends, and so when I saw Mayhem come out, I'm like, oh, Steven's the lead of this one. I'm like, and I'm the lead of this is Victor Crowley. I'm like, wow, this is really cool. But it was interesting that no one had really mentioned it, which was kind of cool that no one saw race and it didn't matter. But to me, it was really kind of cool, and that it didn't really matter to Joe or Adam that you know their lead characters were Asian American. But I thought it was really cool, you know.
Yeah, I gotta say, I mean, I feel like that's a huge accomplishment for sure. That's definitely is worth the recognition. Oh, sorry. Definitely worth the recognition nowadays in Hollywood and how like we're experiencing like the largest push in Hollywood and the industry for representation of all colors and of all races.
Yeah.
So I just think it's definitely worth noting that.
Definitely, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also, so what are your views on representation in Hollywood as an Asian actor? And also to follow up, do you have any goals and aspirations that you would like to achieve in the industry?
I mean, I've tried in all aspects that I can. After Better Luck Tomorrow, just seeing when I would go on tour, seeing like the new generation were like so inspired by this, you know, and like a lot of people quit being like their bio majors and got into like the arts, you know, and not necessarily because of the movie, but like because they saw that it was possible, you know, and that there were other options if they wanted to, inclined to be, you know, do something different. And so I always had tried to do that behind the scenes in any project that I do, even with Hatchet, changing the accent, with Secret Identities, the graphic novels, trying to give other artists, you know, a springboard. And so when you see stuff like, with stuff like that happens with opportunities with Iron Fist, where it's like, oh man, you had that chance, man, you know. And it's like with Michael B. Jordan, you'd be playing Torch, you know, in the Fantastic Four. It's like, okay, here we go, you know. And then, but like, we're just not there yet, apparently. And I always go back to like when Brandon Lee died during the Crow.
Yeah.
I think that was like a big hit for the Asian American community, because I think he could have been like the guy.
Yeah, he could have been like, you know, a really big actor, because in that movie alone, I mean, he is so brilliant, and two, the legacy that he has being Bruce Lee's son, and that was just such a sad moment, because as I say, The Crow is one of my favorite movies. And
I was just starting to be an actor when that came out, and then with Rapid Fire and The Crow, I was like, oh, this is good. He's paving the way, and I'm just getting started. You know, I'm gonna ride his coattails. And then, when that happened, I was like, oh man, I just remember thinking that this is an important, you know, it's a big hit for the Asian American actors, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I gotta say, bring up The Crow. My brother was a huge fan of The Crow. He had posters everywhere. He had the Crow insignia tattooed on him as well. And I definitely saw it when he like I experienced his loss for that character as well. I was pretty young like when it happened,
right?
But just seeing him how he was affected, it was very detrimental. And I never really noticed, like I never really thought about that before. I was like, oh man, that is like a huge hit.
Yeah.
Oh, it's
because you need a guy that like the girls want to be with and the guys want to be like, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of like the phrase, and then. And so now, you know, it's getting there. But it's, you know, especially with like Badlands you've got Daniel Henney, and so it's like, but right now got to find that movie star, apparently. That's like the vehicle.
Yeah, because John Cho has done a lot because he's been able to be, you know, leading man even in romantic comedy, you know, mm-hmm. type shows and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, as you say, there's just still not that much out there. But we are getting a woke horror renaissance with stuff like Get Out and, as we see, you know, the Victor Crowley franchise and everything. So, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. So I'd like to ask, is that, have you heard any news on any sequel to Victor Crowley?
Yeah.
Are we getting the Fifth Hatchet film?
I mean, this movie, the way it's set up, I mean, it's lending to it.
Which I love, by the way. Mm. Yeah.
There's a something in the end credits that makes
we
it
see
interesting.
A familiar face.
Yeah, and my character in that familiar face has never interacted, so that could be something to be explored. But I haven't heard, you know, anything definitive, right? Because I mean, we're on the third movie, we're kind of like on parallel storylines. We don't interact with each other,
right?
Yeah, so.
Wait, did I miss something? Is there something after? Is this post credit?
Did you?
Yeah,
miss?
There's an in-credit scene. It's like a Marvel movie. You gotta watch
Go
it.
Go get the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
I need. Oh my god.
But, yeah, like in two sequels, sometimes get better. My favorite of the Friday the 13th franchise, as everyone's heard me say a thousand times on this network and the other one, is Jason Lives Part 6. Cool. So that's the thing: is Hatchet has room to grow.
Should we spoil the mid? Credits or yeah, do you want to know?
I don't know. Yeah, let's do it.
Spoiler alert if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
All right. Well, we see a familiar face, Mary Beth.
Yeah, Danielle Harris's character.
I loved it too.
At the end of three, she gets the tree, right?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Well, she's alive.
Yeah,
she's alive.
I was wondering. I was like, okay, I'm just not gonna, you know. Okay, she's like in my mind. I'm like, okay, she's gone. Like, because it's mainly more a focus of you on you for Victor Crowley.
Right. Yeah.
Oh my god, I need to go back and I'm on rent. I need to buy this film. I can't believe I missed something that big. Oh, I just didn't. It just didn't click.
That's okay. You know most of everything. Yeah. My whole career. What else you got there?
No, jeez, it's not enough. Okay. Oh my goodness. Sorry, I'm getting over it. So, is there a certain film out of the quadrilogy that like definitely has like a special place in your heart?
I would have to say it's this one,
Victor Crowley.
It just the all four films are kind of like I always equate it to like a year in high school. Like every year is very different, right? In your life and path and stuff like that, and people that you meet, and I've met great friends on all of them. The first one was kind of like camp, getting everyone together, but you don't know what you're kind of doing. But you'll never forget your first one, right? Because mm-hmm. I mean, it's so great. And then the second one, different dynamics, a little bit rougher, just because it's it's kind of like you're in the swamp, actual swamp, and you're in a soundstage, but it becomes like a petri dish because nothing escapes, so everyone got sick.
Oh, no.
And the third one was. Different field, more military, because you got the SWAT mm-hmm. team. So it's like, and our armorer, the guy who was in charge of the guns, was like, it was not good. I did not feel safe. Let's just say so. I had like real fear that I was channeling into my acting.
Was he Danny McBride in Tropic Thunder?
Yeah,
that kind
yeah
of
exactly. Yeah. I'm like, I'm going to get shot on this movie. And then the fourth one is kind of very revisited back to the first one in terms of like the dynamics of like people. We don't know what's going on. Only I know what's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, all these people think that he's like a myth because it happened 10 years ago and nothing has happened since. Mm-hmm. Right. And also being the lead character in it was kind of cool. Being like the senior, you know,
yeah.
like and being able to, you know, it was cool. I mean, there's more to do, more storyline to navigate, you know. So that was just a lot of fun. So I would have to say this one is really, and just the great cast too, and that last day, just how we all came together, kind of like we were like in the trenches, like everybody, we're on the same page here. You know, we all gotta bring it. You know,
mm-hmm. I just want to point out, like I was telling you before too, that I wasn't really a huge fan of the slasher film and the slasher genre, But Victor Crowley is just something different for me. It's something that I just enjoyed immensely with every film from the beginning to like the horror, like the heavy metal opening, just like just getting me pumped up. I'm like, hell yeah, let's do this. Like at first I was like, what is this? Like, you know, just like what's going
on here? Totally really isn't anything like it, right? Yeah. So like, of course you don't know. Yeah.
Like I thought it was gonna be like these guys are like hanging out in New Orleans, right? And they're doing Mardi Gras and all that, and then it's like the guy the sad sap who like he wants to not focus on his girlfriend, so they do the whole chore. And I thought it was gonna be like like these friends are gonna go and die, but no, it's like this whole tour boat goes out, and then they have that cool twist of Mary Beth who's trying to like avenge
her brother
and her father, yeah, in the beginning. Which was played by Freddy Krueger himself.
Yeah, Robert Englund.
Robert Englund, yeah. That was so cool. I was like, oh, man, look at that. Yeah.
So in the first one, we had Freddy, Robert Englund. We had Kane Hodder. Jason. And then Tony Todd.
Candyman. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
And Danielle Harris was in Halloween in the 5th and 6th, I think. Yeah.
There you go. Look at that. Wow. And it's just, I just enjoy, like, I mean, even from, like, because, like, I could see how some people just don't get it, like as in like mm-hmm. not it's not like they don't get the like the comedy or the horror, but I just like I've been watching films for so long that I'm thankful that I'm like able to pick up what the films are putting down even when they do have a slight struggle with it, you know, but it was just so fun from beginning to end watching Hatchet and watching what like really like got me like, oh man, this is awesome. Like at the end of Hatchet 1, when I started Hatchet 2 and it picks up from the same exact spot, I'm just like, oh, it's one of those. Like, oh, like this is like a continuing story. This isn't like, no, that we're just gonna scrap everything that happened in 1 and we're just gonna like redo like everything in 2 kind of thing. And I was like, no, you kind of have to like watch 1 to see the saga of like Mary Beth like trying to avenge her fathers. Mm-hmm. And then they add more to the mythos of who Victor Crowley mm-hmm. is in 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then like how Tony Todd's character tries to like appease the spirit by like offering up the 3 kids who like burned down the house and everything. And I was just like, oh, this is so cool. Like not only that, we get Tony Todd's version of the Victor Crowley mythos that is just adds even more about like how the original mom does a voodoo curse on I guess the mistress and the father, mm-hmm. and how Victor Crowley was to be. And I was just like, oh, this is so cool. Yeah. Like I can't wait. And then just 3 just adds so much more, and it got like a Predator vibe to it, because it's like a bunch of heavily armed dudes,
yeah.
and the very tall guy's like, let's dance, and he just gets like ripped to shreds like right away,
which is great because the guy is Derek Mears, who played Jason in the reboot version, so it's like it's Jason versus Jason.
I was about to say, okay,
that was one of my favorite things.
That's amazing.
So you were like, Kane Hodder versus Derek Mears, let's do this, and then like it's over.
I didn't know exactly, but I knew. I was like, this is something about this is very special. I just don't know yet.
This is I've always loved this tidbit. In the first one, Tony Todd is like, he's like talking, telling about the legend, mm-hmm. and in the background you hear like all these like chirping, and like we were shooting and there were like birds that just would not leave, and just you hear toot 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 whatever. So he's like, we're running out of time. He does a scene and he goes, and at the end he goes, if you now excuse me, I need to tend to me birds.
So he just saved the whole scene by just with that one line.
He's like, there's supposed to be birds.
I remember that line. Yeah, that was so good.
That's why in number 2 he's got birds all over, because he's established he's got birds.
That's great. And also, yeah, birds are always used to like when danger's around, they're like birds start chirping and like that weird like supernatural element to it, which I thought was great. And apart from like, yeah, like it kind of like, I was like, I kind of want to check out more slasher films because of Victor Crowley. I'm granted, they're not going to be as special, but either way, I want to check them out. Second thing is, this is one of the first films where I'm actually rooting for the monster. I'm rooting for the killer. I'm rooting for Victor Crowley. Like, after the first one, I'm like, let's go. Number 2, let's do it. How are you going to kill these people? Like, let's figure this out.
That's why I love Friday the 13th, too. It's like, you know, the one where you root for the killer is the one, because you're like, man, some of these people are really annoying. You just want them to die. but that's the fun part, is you like being in that. That's why I like playing the Friday the 13th game, too.
I was definitely biased going into these films, because like, oh, there's Perry Shin, there's my boy. boy. Yeah, let's get it. And then also one's Victor Crowley. And the second one, I was like, there's my other boy. Let's do it. There he is. I'm like, how are you going to do it? You know? Like, it's one of the first times I've ever experienced where I'm like, yeah, get him. Like, get him. I'm
like, oh my God, what am I doing?
And I did also mention, like, there was one death that really shook me to my core, which was when it's in Victor Crowley's house, and it's in the second film, and it's the big bald man,
Ari Mylohov.
Oh, thank you so much for that. Yeah, he makes him bite on the table and then just curves him, and the top of his head just slides, and then you can see like his eyes still blinking. I was just like,
It's always it's those, very American it's, History yeah, X.
It's always
it.
Those jaw dropping, like literally jaw dropping, for lack of a better term, like death. There's like a jaw death in like every single one, isn't there? There's like ripping.
Oh my god!
And there's like, Sabrina and Victor Crowley. Uh-huh. Like, oh my god!
Yeah.
So,
you're absolutely right. Yeah.
What's up with that? Like, literally jaw dropping. Like, it's ridiculous.
But yeah, I gotta say, I have such a deep appreciation for these films now, and I want to recommend them to everyone. If you're listening, just watch it's worth it. Watch Hatchet 1, 2, 3. Watch Victor Crowley. They're such fantastic films. They're well made. Cinematography is fantastic. Adam Green is definitely someone to keep your eye out. He's gonna be such a huge player. No, he already is. I just want him to blow up more, along with Joe Lynch, because those guys are like dynamic duo, kind of like they're so cool. Unfortunately, we do have to wrap up, but so I would just like to play this one clip. We brought back the Death of the Week. There you go. Yeah, so we have this clip of Death of the Week. I call it Sanding Down Your Shen. So it's very quick. So there's... there it is.
Who is
there's
that?
Sandy.
Who
could
that be? There's Sandy, yeah. It's going to work at the back of your head. Oh, my God. And this is from the second film.
Nice.
There's your brains explode. And that's the clip right there. Oh my goodness.
Beautiful.
I just love all the use of guts and brains and everything. Like, they do a really good job of including those. I like that.
So much blood had gotten to my eyes in that scene that my contacts when I took them out were stained red.
Oh man.
I was like, oh my God. And then a third one had happened again. And then Victor Crowley, I'm like, why don't I learn? Why don't I just take my contacts out during those scenes?
Yeah, I mean, you really gotta see. You just got blood everywhere. Yeah. You're like, all right, that's fine. Thank you so much again, Perry,
for
being
me.
Here.
It was fun.
So I would like to go ahead and give you the platform to see if you want to promote anything that's coming out, or if you're working on anything, go ahead, and also where they can find you online.
Back on General Hospital this week.
Oh, nice.
I start airing some stuff, adopting the baby.
Oh,
and
big step.
I just shot two movies. One is called Automation, where I create this robot that ends up going a little crazy. My bad. And then I shot a movie that Bria Grant co-wrote with Jason Miller, who was a director from Unidentified, called Death of a Thousand Madelines. And it's a time travel movie. We create a time machine. And things don't go well.
is it horror as well?
It becomes a horror movie.
Time traveling horror movie? Yeah. I'm so down.
Those are my
favorite
genres.
Bad stuff starts coming back from the future.
And are you currently filming that, or is that?
I shot both of those in January. It was January, December,
Oh, wow. So that was very recent then.
Yeah.
Right on. So within the next year or so, probably. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Keep an eye out for that, everybody. Let's just go down the list. Oh, yeah, and where they can find you on?
At parryshen.com, parryshen on Instagram and Twitter.
Yeah, definitely check it out. It's a great website. I was perusing it last night. I was like, oh, this is so cool. All right, Lucretia.
All right, guys. I'm Lucretia Lyons. You can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one. And on our sister station, AfterBuzz TV, Horror TV Weekly, is now at Thursdays at 6 p.m. live. But you can always watch it on their channel as well. And also download my podcast, Mrs. Brightside, on all your podcast apps, iTunes, Google Play, whatever. It's a fun little positive comedy podcast. Nice to listen to.
Right on.
Subscribe.
Yes, guys, and I'm Oliver Drennan. Follow me on all social media platforms at Ollie Dreamer. If you like cosplays like me, follow my Instagram at Ollie Cosplays, and always check me out on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. on AfterBuzz's America's Next Top Model After Show.
Oh, that's right. Yep. I also engineered that show. Well, here and there I engineered that show. So I engineered your first one. Sorry. And I am shivering because it's very cold in here. My name is Anthony Becerra. You can find me everywhere at TonyBTony_. Again, it's TonyBTony_. I changed that. I'll also like to promote Horror TV Weekly, which is Thursdays at 6 p.m. with Lucretia Lyon and Chauncey Robinson. And also, I help produce a show called Meet the Movie Press. It's been going on for years now, and it's every Friday at 9 a.m. with Jeff Snyder and Simon Thompson. They talk about the latest Hollywood industry news. It's very niche news. They talk about like what's being casted, who's being casted, what's being greenlit and all that. So if you follow the film industry, definitely check out their podcast live, or just find it on iTunes and everything, as well as rate and subscribe for them and for our show. It would be a great help for us, and we'd greatly appreciate it. And please tune in next week for Horror Movie News. And that has been our episode. Thank you again, Perry, for joining us.
Thank
and that's
you so
it.
Much.
That's a wrap.
Bye.
Until next week. Bye-bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.